In 1929, famed pilot and aerial entrepreneur Charles Lindbergh was seeking another publicity stunt. 2 years earlier, he had made world history by crossing the Atlantic in his plane, the Spirit of St. Louis. His new plan was to demonstrate the viability of airplane archaeology.
He would fly over unexplored swaths of Central America, looking for undiscovered pre-Columbian ruins. As he flew, he would radio his findings in, and they would immediately be released by the media to an eagerly waiting American public.
As Lindbergh prepared, he hoped to find the rumored lost city of El Dorado, a legendary city of gold whose name still conjures up magnificent treasures.
And while he didn't see El Dorado, high above the deep jungles of Honduras's Mosquitia, along the Mosquito Coast, Lindbergh noticed something.
He described it as a large settlement peeking out from under the dense jungle canopy. It was gleaming with beautiful white stonework. Lindbergh dubbed it the White City.
La Ciudad Blanca, the lost city of the monkey god. It would come to be known by many names.
Its legend attracted a storied lineage of explorers, treasure hunters, and archaeologists. They were determined to find this mythical city, despite its curses.
Welcome to Gone, a Parcast original. I'm Molly.
And I'm Richard. Every other Monday, we examine mysterious disappearances and the theories they spawned. From the Amber Room to Michael Rockefeller, Picasso paintings to the Etruscan language, the Roanoke colony to the lost Russian cosmonauts. If it's gone, we're looking for it.
You can find all episodes of Gone and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Gone for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Gone in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
And if you enjoy today's episode, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help.
Today, we'll be looking for the lost city of the monkey god, a legendary settlement hidden in the jungles of Honduras. Some people claim it's a storybook city invented by gold-hungry conquistadors, but others believe there's truth to the legend.
La Ciudad Blanca, the lost city of the monkey god. Caa Camasa. The legends which surround it are just as varied as the names. Some stories claim it is the birthplace of the Aztec wind god Quetzalcoatl. Others claim that its original inhabitants vanished into thin air. But one prevailing idea is that it is a haunted, even cursed place.
The city hasn't littered the pages of pulp novels and adventure films like the ancient, famous metropolises El Dorado and Antilla, but a number of explorers have devoted their lives to searching for it. But as is the case with many pre-Columbian sites, they never knew exactly where to look or even exactly what to look for.
In this episode, we're going to examine the historical events and mythological stories that surround the lost city of the monkey god. And we're going to explore two very different theories about what the city really is.
The first theory is that the city was a legend conceived by Hernan Cortes. After sacking Tenochtitlan, the capital city of the Aztecs, in 1521, Cortes wanted even more glory and gold to increase his stature. He set off into the South American continent, following indigenous rumors of luxurious hidden cities. If this theory is true, it means that the lost city of the monkey god never really existed at all. It was all a fantasy.
Our second theory, however, flies in the face of our first. In the 20th century, several explorers and archaeologists began to explore La Mosquitia, where the lost city of the monkey god was supposedly located. And suddenly, the existence of the lost city didn't seem so far-fetched at all. This theory claims that the legends Cortez followed into the jungle were based in fact. The lost city of the monkey god was real.
The conquest of the Americas has been taught to most of us in a couplet. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
But the real events were decidedly less charming. The conquest of the Americas was a brutal, bloody affair. European explorers raced across the Atlantic to carve up territories for their monarchs back home. Every ship that was sent to the New World came back brimming with jewels, gold, artifacts, and slaves.
Perhaps none of these European explorers was more renowned or ruthless than Hernan Cortes. Born in 1485, during the Age of Exploration, Cortes was surrounded by Spanish ports filled with spices and exotic finery. When sailors returned from the New World boasting about the wonders they had encountered, Cortes's mind filled with dreams of conquest.
In 1504, 19-year-old Cortes set sail for the New World, headed to the island of Hispaniola. But instead of the life of adventure he'd always imagined,
he caught syphilis. Forced to give up further exploits, a housebound Cortes worked as a notary. Through this work, however, he slowly gained position and privilege. And when he finally recovered after 6 long years, his status afforded him a spot on a conquistador's ship. The conquistador was Diego Velázquez, and the ship was headed for Cuba.
It was a first step in the right direction. In Cuba, Cortes was able to establish himself as a trusted hand of the Spanish crown and an able strategist. In 1518, at age 33, he was rewarded for his efforts. Cortes was made Captain General of a new expedition to explore the mainland, exactly as he had always wanted.
With 11 ships, 508 soldiers, droves of sailors, and 16 horses, Cortes sailed for the mainland on the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico.
When they landed on the shore, Cortes immediately set all of his expedition's ships on fire.
For Cortes, there would be no turning back to his former station or his former life. He was a conquistador now. He would either make a name for himself on this new continent or die forgotten. Cortes's party journeyed to the very heart of the Aztec Empire, the great city of Tenochtitlan. Cortes sat proudly astride his horse as he entered the city on November 8, 1519.
The Aztecs allegedly watched him in astonishment. The fair-skinned conquistador resembled one of the most sacred gods in their pantheon, the wind god, Quetzalcoatl. His arrival also seemed to fulfill one of their ancient prophecies. Legend told that Quetzalcoatl would be white-skinned, bearded, opposed to human sacrifice, and that he would come from the east.
All accurate descriptors of Cortes. The Spaniard and his soldiers were welcomed with open arms. They were led to feast-laden tables and given access to sacred temples within the city. They were even hailed as gods by the Aztec Emperor Montezuma. As such, Montezuma yielded to all of Cortes's wants and desires.
What Cortes wanted was gold, all the gold in the city. But his constant demands and proclamations grew tiring. And when his supporter Montezuma was murdered on July 1, 1520, Cortes was no longer welcome in Tenochtitlan. A hostile Aztec population drove Cortes and his men from the city.
But Cortes regrouped. He returned with more forces. And on August 13, 1521, he razed Tenochtitlan and claimed the Aztec Empire for Spain.
This taste of power, wealth, and conquest only fueled Cortes's ambitions further. What other vast empires overflowing with riches awaited his conquest? legends of opulent cities still untouched began circulating the Americas.
Including the legend of a dazzling gold-filled city, the capital of a province called Huetapalan. In 1526, Cortes wrote to Emperor Charles V explaining the legendary province.
For I have trustworthy reports of very extensive and rich provinces, and of powerful chiefs ruling over them, and of one in particular, called Huetapalan. So wonderful are the reports about this particular province, that even allowing for exaggeration, it will exceed Mexico in riches, and equal it in the largeness of its towns and villages, the density of its population, and the policy of its inhabitants.
With Cortes' successful conquest of the Aztecs just behind him, his new mission was to engineer more victories for himself. He would start by looking for Huetapalan's capital, what we now know as the Lost City of the Monkey God. For 2 long years, from 1524 to 1526, he combed through the jungles of Honduras.
But he never found the city, which leads us to our first theory, that the lost city of the monkey god never existed.
But if it never existed, where did the rumors come from?
Cortes spent 2 years searching for the city. There's no doubt he believed in it. But our first theory has a compelling explanation as to why Hernan Cortes may have wanted to believe in rumors, and why the people around him told him such stories.
After Cortes conquered the Aztec Empire, more and more hopeful Spaniard conquistadors were arriving in the New World. They'd heard the tales of Tenochtitlan's wealth, and they were ready to stake their own claims on the riches of South America.
To maintain his position at the top of this growing heap, Cortes had to prove that he was the best of these conquistadors.
Pursuing tales of other wealthy, powerful civilizations like the Aztecs provided the best means of doing this. By conquering more cities and sending home more gold, Cortes could remain relevant.
As for those he'd conquered, providing tales of these cities was a means of maintaining Cortes's favor, an essential task in the face of a violent, bloodthirsty conqueror. The oppressed South Americans cleverly invented rumors of grander, more glorious cities to protect what remained of their own.
Advocates of this theory argue that Cortes's search for the lost city of the monkey god was a fool's errand. He was told what he wanted to hear, and he believed it.
The motivation was certainly there on all fronts, and the fact that he never found the city supports this idea.
But Cortes wasn't the only one talking about an incredible hidden city in the 16th century. In 1544, a Catholic missionary, Bishop de Pedraza, wrote to the King of Spain about a city where its rulers eat off plates of gold, a city that sounds a lot like the capital of Huetapalan that Cortes was searching for.
Perhaps it wasn't just Cortes's delusions that created the legendary city of the monkey god. Perhaps it was out there, somewhere in the dense, verdant jungle, hidden beneath the impenetrable layers of rainforest canopy.
In the 20th century, this idea took a deeper hold as a new generation of explorers trekked out into the Mosquitia of Honduras.
Coming up, the rumor of the lost city of the monkey god rears its head once again with some shocking results.
Thank you so much for listening. We want to take this time to tell you that Gone will be taking December 30th off for the holidays. We'll be back with a brand new episode on January 13th. In the meantime, we do have a special gift to share with you. While we're away, we'll be airing our listeners' most requested episodes of 2019. If you'd like to check out the most requested episodes from Parcast's other shows, subscribe to Parcast Presents to hear our best of 2019. From everyone here at Parcast, we'd like to wish you a happy holiday season. We're thankful for your support and look forward to bringing you even more unique and entertaining podcasts in the new year. Thanks for listening.
Now back to the story.
In the 16th century, Spanish conquistador Hernán Cortés set off into the Honduran jungles, looking for an enormously wealthy hidden city. But even after 2 years of searching, he never located it. Some theorists assume that that's because it never existed. The legendary city and its fabulous wealth was simply a story the people he oppressed invented to appease Cortés's hunger for more conquest and more gold. For centuries, this seemed logical, considering that the city was never found nor further discussed. But whispers of the legendary metropolis began once again in 1924.
Almost four centuries after Cortés first set out for the lost city of the Monkey God, the world opened wide. In the early 20th century, the airplane made a new form of exploration possible. Expeditions set out in many uncharted territories, including the Mosquito Coast.
The Mosquito Coast remained just as densely forested as it was in Cortés's day. Thanks to its deadly lagoons, legions of army ants, and highly venomous snakes, it also remains largely unmapped and often inaccessible.
In 1924, Dr. Herbert Spindin was one of the first modern archaeologists to attempt cutting through the forbidding jungle. He was determined to begin excavating ruins in the area.
And he started a trend. In 1927, a Luxembourgian ethnologist named Eduard Consemius visited the province. While there, he heard rumors about important ruins discovered by a rubber tapper 20 to 25 years ago, a most important city with white stone buildings similar to marble.
Consemius never located this rumored rubber tapper, but he did speak to native guides about taking a trip to search for the White City.
This is the first time the White City appeared in scientific literature. This time, not as a thriving, wealthy capital, but as a ruin. Still, it was in the same area as Cortés's mythical city. Perhaps it was the same place.
This brings us to the winding 20th century search for proof of our second theory. The lost city of the Monkey God, at this period called the White City, was real. It was simply hiding somewhere in the jungles of Honduras.
There was just one problem. The guide Consemius spoke to refused to take him.
This was thanks to the fact that another important feature of the lost city had reared its head, the curse. According to the native guides Consemius spoke with, if they took him to the White City, they'd die.
The guides didn't specify why they'd die, but they insisted the place Consemius sought was cursed. The archaeological community was curious about this curse, but they were more excited than afraid. They were thrilled at the possibility that this White City was a fresh set of major ruins. It was in this climate that, in 1929, Charles Lindbergh reported seeing white ruins from his airplane. The curiosity around this archaeological site only grew.
In 1933, archaeologist William Duncan Strong decided it was time to verify the rumors. He launched an expedition into Mosquitia, and he didn't find a white city. But he did find non-Mayan archaeological artifacts, including great earthen mounds. It seemed that some other unknown civilization had existed in the area.
The new evidence led to more questions. Who were these people? How had they vanished? And why had they never made it into the records of nearby indigenous empires?
To answer these questions, a series of new expeditions were mounted.
Among the first, the heir of an oil empire, George Haya, funded a well-known explorer of the time, Captain R. Stuart Murray.
On June 16, 1934, Captain Murray explained his mission to the Calgary Daily Herald. There's supposedly a lost city I'm going to look for, which the locals call the City of the Monkey God. They're afraid to go near it, but I'm going to look for it nevertheless.
Thanks to the native guides Murray spoke with and Murray himself, the city officially had a new name, the one that has stuck to this day, the Lost City of the Monkey God.
Murray even came home from his expedition with a statue of a monkey. Another notable artifact from this trip was a stone with what appeared to be hieroglyphic-like carvings.
But these and a few other artifacts were all Murray found. He never located any ruins matching the description of the White Stone City. And so his expedition, like those before it, stoked the curiosity about the missing city without confirming that it existed or answering any of the many questions swirling around this increasingly mysterious metropolis.
5 years later, in 1939, George Haya found another volunteer to look for the city, an explorer by the name of Theodore Mord.
But this expedition was different.
After 4 months hacking his way up the Wampu River, Mord emerged from the Mosquito Coast, claiming to have found the lost city of the Monkey God.
On July 12, 1940, the New York Times reported, "City of the Monkey God is believed located."
The mystery, it seemed, was solved. The city was real, crowed rejoicing archaeologists. The public, too, was fascinated. Mord became a sensation.
He wasted no time capitalizing on his newfound fame, publishing a travelogue of his expedition called In the Lost City of Ancient America's Monkey God.
The account announced that the city had been home to an ancient people he called the Chorotegans. The Chorotegans were a pre-Columbian tribe that lived throughout Central America. Mord supported his claims with lurid details of the tribe's rituals and, most importantly, thousands of artifacts he claimed belonged to this lost civilization.
But Mord seemed to be hiding something. He refused to divulge directions to the lost city.
Then, in 1954, he hanged himself from a shower rod.
Suddenly, the archaeological community wasn't so sure what to think of Mord's discovery. None of them could launch an expedition to further his research, considering he never revealed the location of the lost city of the Monkey God before he died.
Some even thought back to the supposed curse surrounding the city. Had Mord paid a steep price for finding the city?
The mysteries of the lost city were far from solved.
In 1976, Dr. David Zink and Dr. Edwin Shook were determined to change that. With funding from the ABC television network, they launched yet another expedition into the Mosquito Coast.
But this time, there were some major differences. Thanks to modern technology, their search was captured by cameras. There was no ambiguity about what they found, because everyone with a television set could see it for themselves. And what did millions of American viewers see? Evidence that a megalithic civilization once existed in the region.
Zink and Shook uncovered earthen mounds, and most importantly, fragments of metates, stone counters with troughs used to grind grain. These were indications of a prior advanced civilization.
But their findings looked nothing like the rumors of the White City. The gleaming, marble-like stone was nowhere to be found.
It didn't seem possible that these ruins were all there was behind the myths.
Which is why, in 1978, explorer Jim Woodman and his partner, Bill Sporer, went trekking in Honduras to search once more. Like those before them, they followed scattered clues from locals as they looked for the site.
Yet again, they failed to find their towering white city.
But their expedition did add one tantalizing new facet to the story of the White City, the story of a horrible curse that laid waste to the city's inhabitants. An elderly member of the local tribe explained, "It came and everyone in our largest city died, generations ago. When a man died from it, he became very pale. The Ciudad Blanca you seek is not a city of white buildings, but of white corpses."
Perhaps the reason the white ruins hadn't been found was because the tribesman was right. The city was white with corpses, not towers, and the corpses had long since returned to the earth. Still, without proof that the city had been found, there was no way to determine the validity of this theory. The mysteries persisted.
Perhaps because the explorers still hadn't talked to the right people.
In the 1990s, renowned archaeologist Christopher Begley traveled to Honduras. And unlike most of the explorers who came before him, he focused his research on interviews with the local Pech people.
The Pech had maintained an oral history of all the ruins in the region, one they had passed down from generation to generation. And their history suggested yet another meaning behind the name White City.
There was once a place, the story goes, called Ka'a Kamasa, which translates roughly to the White House. It was a place filled with gods who fled from their native cities and villages when Europeans began their conquest.
He also learned of another name for the ruins, Place of the Ancestors. The Pech said this place was only accessible to a person who spoke all seven indigenous languages. By the 1990s, that had become impossible. Thus, the Pech said, the lost city of the monkey god remained off limits and perhaps even had simply disappeared.
This mythical explanation for the city added intrigue to the story. But still, the mystery remained unsolved.
Then, in 2012, Lindbergh came back.
Well, not exactly. But aerial archaeology once again made its way to center stage. The National Center for Airborne Laser Mapping at the University of Houston began utilizing a new technique called LIDAR. It involved firing a laser light from a plane to the ground in rapid pulses. A sensor on the plane then measured the amount of time it took for the light to return.
Since light travels at a constant speed, the distance between the Earth and a plane could be calculated for each ping.
Essentially, this new technology could now map the floor of the jungle from an airplane and potentially find buildings hidden among the trees.
The perfect location to test it was the dense, tangled mosquito coast of Honduras, the supposed location of the White City.
The National Center for Airborne Laser Mapping flew a LIDAR-equipped Cessna over the region, anxiously waiting for the information to relay.
When the first images of the LIDAR scans came back, it was apparent something unusual was there.
Christopher Fisher, an archaeologist from Colorado State University, saw evidence in a small valley of public and ceremonial architecture, earthworks and house mounds, possible irrigation canals and reservoirs.
In short, it was a city.
Had the lost city of the monkey god finally been found?
Coming up, we'll examine the LIDAR discovery and its significance for the mystery of the missing city. Now, back to the story.
Throughout the 20th century, a series of expeditions set out into the Honduran jungles to try and find the lost city of the monkey god. Some explorers, like R. Stuart Murray and Theodore Mord, brought back artifacts they claimed were from this mysterious city. But no one ever revealed its exact physical location.
Then, in the early 21st century, technology opened up the region in a whole new way and began to suggest that the lost city might not be so lost after all.
And that's where we join explorer and filmmaker Steve Elkins and author Douglas Preston in 2015. Utilizing the LIDAR information procured in 2012, the two set out into the jungle with Chris Fisher, who had been part of the original LIDAR project.
They marched through an untamed jungle, surrounded by howler monkeys, jaguars, and venomous snakes, straight towards the valley the LIDAR project had identified as the site of an ancient city.
They arrived,
and they saw nothing.
But then Fisher grew excited. they were atop a mound, even if it just looked like part of an endless sea of jungle floor.
Then they found a large stone. Brushing it off, they saw it was shaped like an altar.
And it was made of white quartz.
As the trio explored the area, Fisher talked a mile a minute as he discovered even more mounds and plazas. These were probably once public buildings, perhaps reserved for an elite class or royalty. All this would have been open and very impressive.
As he ran from mound to mound, his enthusiasm only escalated.
They had found it. The ruins. White quartz. The White City.
They also found hundreds of artifacts depicting everything from a jaguar face to large stone jars covered with snakes.
The existence of the rumored White City seemed to have its proof. This ancient metropolis matched the centuries' worth of description that had made its way out of the jungle.
The discovery was heralded as an extraordinary find. National Geographic published an article entitled, "In Search for Legendary City of the Monkey God, Explorers Find the Untouched Ruins of a Vanished Culture."
The government of Honduras immediately declared the site a national treasure.
Soon after, the Honduran military and Honduran Institute of Archaeology took over the site, only allowing authorized groups and individuals into the ruins. The country wanted to preserve the culture and archaeological values of the site, even putting forth legislation to halt the logging that was encroaching on the valley. But several mysteries about the city remained.
First of all, nothing at the site had been disturbed for millennia. If Theodore Mord had indeed been here back in 1939, as he'd claimed, he didn't leave even the slightest trace. All the artifacts were untouched. So what had Mord found?
Douglas Preston resolved these questions in his 2017 book, The Lost City of the Monkey God.
Mord, Preston's research found, never made it to the Lost City. In fact, according to Preston, Mord made everything up. The artifacts, purchased from natives. The details, fabricated. The expedition, just a great story.
It was a brilliant ruse, one that he took to his early grave.
Some archaeologists suggested examining the assumption that this ruin was indeed the lost city of the monkey god. It was impossible to link it to whatever city Cortez was looking for back in the 16th century. Cortez, after all, never talked about a white city, just a rich, gold-filled one.
But as is often the case, the story in the press won out. Multiple publications heralded the finding of the lost city of the monkey god.
For most concerned, the lost city had indeed been found.
We think it's fair to accept that conclusion, considering the fact that the city Elkins, Preston, and Fisher found was undoubtedly rich once upon a time.
The links to later stories about the city go beyond the white stone connection as well. The site also had a supposed curse.
It started for Douglas Preston long after the expedition ended. After all of his other insect bites began to fade away, he still had one persistent bug bite that seemed incurable. Other explorers from the team reported similar wounds, wounds that sometimes wept like ulcerous sores. They joked about the city's curse at first, but then began to worry as the fevers set in.
That bite turned out to be a flesh-eating virus called leishmaniasis. As Douglas Preston explained, it's a flesh-eating parasite, and if it gets to your face, it eats away at the skin, and it gets your nose and your lips first, and they fall off. Then it starts to eat away at the rest of your skin until you have an open sore where your face used to be. Eventually, it eats away at the bones of your face and there's essentially a hole there, and you die.
Some of the explorers wondered if leishmaniasis could be the curse that drove the original inhabitants out of the lost city of the monkey god.
It's possible, but Preston himself doubted the connection. he saw another, likelier explanation.
It's rooted in one of the oldest myths about the city, which Preston explained in his book. There was once a great city in the mountains, struck down by a series of catastrophes, after which the people decided the gods were angry and left, leaving behind their possessions. Thereafter, it was shunned as a cursed place, forbidden, visiting death on those who dared enter.
Preston attributed that wave of death to the diseases which the colonizers carried. Diseases like smallpox, typhoid, and measles. Diseases against which the natives had no natural immunity. While the conquistadors began the conquest, epidemics finished the fight.
Even in an isolated valley hidden from most of the world, illness still found its way to the white city. As conquistadors conducted slave raids in the populated areas of Honduras, villagers escaped into the jungles, carrying these diseases with them.
Preston argues that when a majority of the lost city's population died from these sudden epidemics, the survivors believed they had been cursed. They abandoned the city and sacred caches of objects. They left behind a forbidden place where death now reigned supreme.
The story fits the legends, so theory number two checks out quite nicely.
But there's another way to look at the mystery, by taking the indigenous perspective.
Archaeologist Chris Begley explained, for the indigenous people, it seems in general that the legend of the City of the Monkey God refers to the last areas in which these groups lived prior to being in close contact with other groups, like where they lived before the Spanish arrived. Essentially, the White City is the place in their memory that no longer exists anymore. Their lost frontier, their lost lives, their lost autonomy, the good old days. They believe in it because it represents the past that they don't want to forget. It is their story.
So while the city found in 2015 seems like a fair candidate for the metropolis Western explorers had been seeking for centuries, it may be that there are two lost cities of the Monkey God.
And that second city, rooted in the storytelling and mythology of indigenous tribes, remains forever gone, along with a rich cultural history decimated by Western conquest. Thanks again for tuning in to Gone. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. You can find more episodes of Gone and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals like Gone for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Gone on Spotify, just open the app and type Gone in the search bar.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. We'll see you next time.
Just because it's gone doesn't mean it can't be found.
Gone was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Dick Schroeder, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, Travis Clark, and Joel Stein. This episode of Gone was written by Drew Moreland, with writing assistance by Drew Cole and stars Molly Brandenburg and Richard Rossner. Just a reminder that we'll be back with a new episode on January 13th. In the meantime, we'll be playing our listeners' most requested episodes of 2019. Thanks again for listening. We hope you have a wonderful holiday season.